Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I was laying in bed listening to the ocean. You ever listen? Maybe the ocean drove me crazy. Listening to the ocean, pound, 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 pound. I had this once in Fiji when I was in the years I was collecting plants in the Fiji Islands. I hated it after a while. You say, oh, how romantic. You spent all those years in those islands. I almost lost my, I went off my noggin. You talk about the Naz. You can go insane on an island. There were no TV, no telephones. I had a call like by a radio telephone. It took hours. Nothing. No radio, no television, nothing. You can go crazy on an out island. Drinking a lot of Yangona with the Fijians, that's Kava Kava to you. That didn't do it. I mean, it's a sedative. But you listen to the ocean after a while on an island, day in and day out, day in and day out. You start to ask yourself, this planet in this universe is one universe amidst millions of universes or trillions of universes, how in the world could you believe that everybody that lived is somewhere either in heaven or hell? How can you believe that? How can you believe you are rewarded in this world if you're good and that if you're bad, you're punished? How can you believe that? I said to myself, I'm not telling you what to believe. I'm not asking you to give up your faith. I mean, a person needs to believe in something in order to guide them through life, so you may as well believe in anything you want to believe in. If it keeps you on the straight and narrow, good for you. But on the other hand, no matter how you stretch it, how in the world can you believe that? It's impossible, I said to myself. Now, I've gone in and out of this before. I mean, even don't get mad at me. I know you want to hear the regular stuff. Even Mother Teresa, if you read what she went through in her life, the doubts she had about the existence of God himself that she never expressed, you know that, don't you? I mean, you want to live in a fairy tale book that she was devout and believed everything that she said, then all right, go ahead. Then believe. Then go listen to the Clarabelle and Jack in the Box about Republicans good, Democrats bad. So what I'm saying to you is a little different. I'm not trying to do something to throw you off. But doubts are reacting to you. Doubts about this whole thing are the essence of mankind. A dog doesn't doubt any of this because a dog doesn't understand it. Only a man can doubt this, and maybe it's a mark of a true believer to not believe at certain points. But right now, I don't know what it is, but, I mean, you know, what's out there, man? It's like, hello, you know, let's keep going for another trillion light years, and you're not going to hit anything. Now, there's space junk.
Savage.
1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Kevin, go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I was calling because I don't think that the Obama administration has been getting enough credit. The economy is turning around, and there
yeah,
are
well, it turned around over the weekend when they decided to say it was turning around. You're right about that. These people live in a dreamland. So last week it was a horror house, and now it's a dream house. How'd that happen?
Well, I think that the Obama administration has gotten a lot of things done, and I think that they've gotten
wait,
more.
Wait, you just said the economy turned around. When did it turn around? On Saturday or Sunday?
Well, it's been turning around all week. It was up last week, and it's up this week. So there's.
Well, why was it down last week and up this week? Because Obama said so?
Well, you know, he's ended the Iraq war, and he's also closed down Gitmo. I mean, these are things that Bush just couldn't do in his.
He closed down Gitmo, and where is he sending the terrorists?
Well, probably to a prison somewhere, but I think the.
Wait a minute. You sound like an ignoramus so far, Kevin. Either you work for Obama or you're perfect to work for him. I don't know which one is yet. But he said he's going to close down Guantanamo Bay within 1 year. But where is he going to send the hardened terrorists?
Well, just the fact that he's able to close it. I mean, close it first, and then we could worry about where we got to put them.
Well, maybe they could. Would you be willing to keep them in your house?
Well, Well, no, but that's not.
Well, why not? Why not? Everything Obama does is so correct. Where is he going to try them? He said he doesn't know.
Well, he'll probably.
Did you know Obama said he does not know where he's going to try them?
Well, that's correct. He'll probably try them in an American judicial system.
Think that these terrorists should be tried in an American judicial system? May I ask you something, since you're such a genius? Where did the phrase enemy combatant come from? Bush?
I think it came from FDR.
You think correctly. Now, since FDR was a socialist president, and even he named people who wanted to kill Americans who were here as enemies, enemy combatants, and tried them on the military tribunals, why would you think it's a good idea to not call them enemy combatants?
Well, I mean, he's just trying to make sure that, you know, that we treat everybody equally. The prisoners
treat everybody equally, even those who want to kill us?
Well,
but they're not American citizens. Why should they be treated equally? Why should non-citizens who have come here to kill us be afforded all of the constitutional protections of a U.S. citizen? What sense does that make?
Well, again, I think treating everybody equally shows the world that we are a good country and we are a good nation. I mean,
You really are an ignorant. You're an ignorant man. You're an ignoramus. You sound like a child. How old are you, actually?
Who, me?
Yeah.
I'm actually 23, and
Well, you sound like an ignorant man. I don't think you live in the real world. Would you consider what was done to these terrorists at Guantanamo real torture?
Yes, I think.
What was done to them? Tell me what was done to them.
My college professors agree with everything that I have to say.
Kevin, what was done to them? I'm asking you, how were they tortured?
Well, they were waterboarding is torture.
What is waterboarding?
Well, it makes the prisoner feel like they're drowning, and it's torture.
Okay, but they actually weren't drowned, were they?
No, but they had the sense that they were getting.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, schmuck. Here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to read to you what actual torture is in a few minutes, and you're going to find out that you're not only a moron, but a schmuck on top of a moron. I'll read you what actually torture is. Only his lips were still intact. The rest of his face was completely crushed. His body was riddled with holes and encrusted with blood. They had tied him up and tortured him with a spiked bat, slowly, for hours, all while he was still alive, awake, conscious. I'll continue to read to you what real torture is, as opposed to what your Marxist college professors told you.
Savage.
I just want to get into dietary for a minute. Monday night, I got to tell you, I had an epiphany in cooking in my house. I got to tell you, I'm somehow influenced sometimes by stories. In other words, if I tell a story about Italy or Italian, I wind up eating Italian food. If that day I'm excited over an Indian story, I'll eat Indian food. Monday night, I had gone shopping at my local market. I would give out his name. He's a nice guy, but I don't want people to look for me there. And I said, I can't find calamari steaks. So he said, I got them in the back. They're frozen in a box. He took them out of the box for me with a hammer and a knife. He broke them apart. Then he has a machine. He put each one in a package that takes the air out and resealed it with the air out of it. And he gave me calamari steaks. It cost me less than $2 a piece. Can you imagine how much they cost even retail? I come home that night. I was in a mood for a calamari steak with mushroom sauce. Now, I've never had it served with mushroom sauce, but because the other member of the dinner wanted a steak, not calamari, I said, I want to make a mushroom sauce for the first time in my life. So I defrosted the calamari on the cold water. Never use hot water when defrosting virtually anything, because if you use hot water, you're partially cooking it, which is very dangerous. Only defrost using cold water. And then you take the plastic off, okay, then you dry them, blah, blah, blah. You only cook them 3-4 minutes on each side in a very hot pan with very little oil, or else it'll get soggy. And make sure you got a little parsley chopped up. Anyway, I made a mushroom sauce that was so good. No butter, no cream, and I defy you to be able to discern whether there was cream or butter in it. I never had anything like. I slept like a baby. I woke up feeling like I had velvet between my joints. I felt so good that I figured I needed to feel bad. So last night, I ordered bad Italian food from a local restaurant. It wasn't bad. It's old style, like Bronx, Staten Island, Brooklyn Italian food, which is actually a pleasure compared to the upscale white tablecloth, shishi bad Italian food kind of restaurants that you find all over, you know, the suburbs. I'm talking meat sauce that's thick, like really heavy, you know, really heavy, like your grandmother made. Your grandmother, not mine. And I got a meat dish, a veal piccata. Then there was – I always eat the other dish on the table. Have you ever seen this going on in restaurants? This goes on for the last number of years. Like men are on low-fat diets. I love to watch this in restaurants. Men over like 40. So the wife usually orders a meal that she knows her husband wants, and he orders something lean.
Oh, I'm the lean. Yeah, something with no salt and no cream, no butter. No. Make it light. Make it light. No cream, no butter.
So he gets this lean dish. She gets this, you know, gut-busting phenomenal dish on her side. Knowing that he's going to pick it up late. And the guy always eats her meal from his side. And she picks at his dish. She eats the lean dish off his plate. And he's every minute, the fork is, the boarding house reach across the table to her dish. I love to watch this. It goes on consistently. So I overindulged. I had nightmares last night from the meat. If I eat meat late, one nightmare after another. I had a nightmare. I was on Broadway in San Francisco in my car, which is a great car, and it wouldn't go forward, only backwards. You ever hear a dream like this? I tried to go forward, and it would go backwards. So I said, I got to get this car parked because I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing with Europe. Dreams are crazy. But my whole dream was about getting the car parked safely so that the dealer could pick it up the next day. But I knew if I left it on Broadway, they would tow it away that night in San Francisco. So I tried to back it down a street, and it was all full of coal. Oh, my God, what a horrible dream. So as I drove into San Francisco today, I went down that very street to see if my car would suddenly stop and only go backwards. No, but it turned out it was only a nightmare from the meat.
Mate, keep in the art, un hesanu. Nena kaka jira, pia tira gom, mate.
My favorite song from the years I spent in the Fiji Islands listening to Indian music on the squeaky radio.
I want Mercedes. Sister has Mercedes. Husband better earn her. I want Mercedes. A Prius. I want Mercedes. Has Mercedes. A Prius. You're not a big man.
In 1815, the American commander Stephen Decatur, I'm talking 1815, sent to stop the Barbary pirates, that was the pirates of those days, in the Mediterranean. He captured the flagship of the Algerian pirates and forced an agreement. When the Algerians later repudiated the agreement, the British and Dutch bombarded Algiers. Now, today, the solution would be to bomb the port of Eyl, E-Y-L, which is the main pirate base on the Somali coast. That would stop it. But that would require a UN Security Council resolution. Oh, right. That's really going to happen. So we're wringing our hands. All the laws are written in favor of the pirates right now. The effort needs to be stepped up into a real military gear, bomb their cities, take their families hostage, and it's the end of the piracy. Now, if you'd rather I talk about an easy mushroom sauce instead of these affairs, fine. Fine. Years ago, there was a firm measures taken against pirates. An expert maritime writer, Dr. David Cordingly, wrote a book called Life Among the Pirates, and he said there would often be a show trial in London, Jamaica, Boston, or Charleston when they were captured. That was followed by a public hanging, and the bodies would be left swinging on the gallows at the entrance to harbors. Sailors would draw the conclusion that piracy was not a good career option. But today, the authorities consist of petticoats rather than real warriors. And that's the story. So you take your 8 ounces of sliced mushrooms. They could be button or baby bellas, cremini. I like the whites. You chop them up. Don't quarter them, eighth them, and then even chop them again. You take 1 tablespoon of olive oil. You take a tablespoon of that Smart Balance if you don't want to use butter, which I don't use. You can use a half a cup of dry red wine, but I would prefer drinking it instead of wasting it in a sauce. Now, the important part of this recipe is the beef broth. I use organic beef broth. There's nothing like it. You don't want to use anything else. Now, on the side, you get 2 tablespoons of flour ready and 3 tablespoons of cold water. This is going to thicken your gravy. You get your salt, your pepper. You get a teaspoon of chopped parsley. I don't like dried. I like fresh. Take the stems off. Chop up the leaves. You saute the mushrooms in the oil and the smart balance. Now, you could add your red wine. Simmer a few minutes. Then you add the beef broth. Simmer a bit, about 5 minutes. You then take the flour and the cold water pre-mixed, and you whisk it, you know, till it's smooth. You stir that into the mushrooms while they're cooking until it's blended. Then it's almost done. Another minute, thickened, bing. If it's too thick, add more broth. And then you add parsley and salt and pepper, and you got about 1.5-2 cups of a mushroom sauce that I think is unbelievable. And you could put it on steak, or you could put it on calamari, as I did. I loved it. That's why I'm talking about mushroom sauce. 15 years in radio, and we're talking about all of the horrible stories of the day. And here we are.
Dr. Savage?
Yes, you're interrupting a show, Doug. What is it?
Sorry, we have something for you.
What is that? In the middle of a show, you're in... Oh, Teddy and his barkathon. I can't believe, how do you do that? How do you take a dog's bark and make it into a tune? Didn't you do it for Christmas for
yes,
me?
Sir.
Yeah. Doug, how do you do? Is there a special, like, Moog synthesizer that you, what do you do with that?
Those are all real barks. I just take his actual tones and figure out where they're going to fit in the song.
I have the A-Team in radio, absolutely, between Doug and Beowulf and the other guy. What's your name, Phil? guys, I want to thank you for putting up with me all of these years. You haven't been doing it for 15 years. You'd be dead by now if you were. But how did you do that? Let me hear the barkathon again, just for a second, a little bit of it. Isn't that sweet? Well, I thanks very much, Doug. I really appreciate that. That is really beautiful.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
It is The Savage Nation. Let me tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. But first we have to listen to Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd. Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd on The Savage Nation, Desafinado. To set the mood and the time, so please, listen to Desafinado, will you, by Stan Getz and Charlie Byrd. And I will tell you the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile who crashed my Jaguar. So as the music fades away, I want to take you back in time to a childhood story. Of course, it's a teenage story at this point. I had a friend whose father was a shady podiatrist, as you can tell by the title of the story. And he had a weird podiatry practice in the back of his apartment in, I think it was Sunnyside, Queens, somewhere in that area. I have no idea what the man did in the back. He was a very strange father. Everybody was afraid of the guy. You'd go, and he was very tall. The father was very tall. He dressed kind of shabbily, but upscale. But it was all tattered, and he always had a weird look on his face. And when the father was not in the apartment, the son, who became the Anglophile later on to cover up his origins, would take you in his father's podiatry studio, clinic, or whatever it was, office, and he'd say with a snicker, "I want you to see my father's rack, where he stretched people or something." And there was always something weird about this guy's podiatry practice. I don't even know what a podiatrist did. Something to do with the feet, but I think this guy did something with another part of the anatomy by implication. Now you speed the clock up. The son who grows up in the shady apartment with a shady father, who was off-beaten, guy who didn't become a real doctor, has to, throw dirt on his origins. So he becomes more Brooks Brothers than anybody we know. He adopts an English accent. And the last I heard, he had married a rich girl, oh, this is a long time ago, and became a banker with the umbrella and the whole deal. Now, there's another element to the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile, which is my Jaguar XK150. Prior to the time that he became a pure Anglophile, he was still my friend, but that's before I left New York. And I had an XK150 Jag that I'll never forget. I loved that car more than, well, most cars. Who remembers what car you love and this and that? But when I say I love that car, you got to remember something. We're limited by our language, English. English has one word for love. I love my car. I love my mother. I love my wife. I love my dog. I love this pizza. I love my new shoes. We're stuck with one verb. In Latin, there are 16 verbs for love, each one slightly more descriptive depending upon the type of love we're talking about. So when I say I love the Jaguar, it's not like I love my dog or any of the other things I mentioned. Well, one night we were partying in the podiatrist's son's apartment. The father, I think, was taking advanced rack stretching lessons somewhere in the Grenada. And as kids would do, we got drunk and probably some other things were used at the party, who knows what. And he said, hey, can I drive your Jag? It must have been 2 o'clock in the morning. And you're a kid. Yeah, here's the keys. So he takes the car out on Queens Boulevard, 2 o'clock in the morning in Queens. And, he raced it out as fast as he could go. And his heart's pounding. He's sitting at a traffic light after, he did his long run. The light's red. He stopped. All of a sudden, he looks in this tiny 2-inch mirror that the Jags came with. And he sees a car careening right at the rear of the car. But before he could get the car in first, clutch it, gear it, and get out of there, crash, bang, boom, smashed in. The back of the car is broken off. And, of course, I've reversed the story. I think it was his Jaguar, and I was driving it, and I got hit from the rear. I really don't remember at this point whose car it was, but I do know who hit us. To this day, and I'm not making this up, I know the guy's name. I remember it. He was an Iraqi. I swear to you. It was very odd, because I didn't know of Iraqis at that time. But he was an Iraqi national with a pure. His name was not Saddam Hussein, I know that, nor was it one of the junior Husseins. But it was an Iraqi national who crashed the Jaguar and broke its back. And, of course, that was that. Our friendship ended soon thereafter. Yes, it was his car. He came and saw it, and the back was broken off the car, and he started to almost cry. He didn't cry like a sissy, but he wept. And he said, you broke the back of my car. I said, I didn't mean it. I was sitting there. And that's the story of the shady podiatrist whose kid became an Anglophile. Now play Desafinado, and I'll tell you why I told you that story. Actually, the song has more meaning to me than the story, because I remember when this song came out. I don't know if I can tell that story. Is that illegal? One of the girls in the crowd had a sister who was a Playboy bunny. She was older. She must have been 22. We were 17, 18, 19. Now, I want to tell you, Playboy Bunny then was a Playboy Bunny. Today, it has no meaning. Today, they look like skanks from the lowest levels of the sewer. I mean, you watch that show with that old degenerate bum. I mean, this guy should be... Let's just stop right there. I never saw anything like these skanky broads he has in that mansion of his. What is so interesting about these lowlife bimbos he has with him? But in those days, a Playboy Bunny was really something. I mean, they were the top of the heap. At least that's how guys saw her. Who knows what they really were? They're probably like every other woman on earth. If they had a good figure, they became a Playboy Bunny. As long as they did the right producer meet, Well, this song was very popular at that time, and she was 22. And everybody in the crowd wanted to get next to the Playboy Bunny. But I was the lucky one that penetrated the ovum. And on the way home from that particular event, which, of course, I was flying high, I couldn't believe it, I was not in the Jaguar. I was in another car. I was in a Chrysler, which had the Hemi engine, but it was not the whatever. It was a Chrysler New Yorker, an old man's car, but it had the Hemi engine. So I'm driving home from that encounter with the Playboy Bunny. And remember, I'm really only a kid. And my mind was certainly not in the car. I mean, where was I? I have no idea. My mind was on cloud nine. Bang, hit from the side by a truck. The car is absolutely totaled. I got to get a tow truck. It's towed home to in front of the house. And I remember selling the car for the engine alone to some hitter kid who was going to take the engine out. We had a long talk about it and use it in a dragster. New York City, WOR. Donna, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Michael. I want to congratulate you. I want to thank you. And I just want
Aloha.
We need you now more than ever.
Aloha.
Hello.
What's on your... Hello, ha! Because I'm sensitive to Obama's home state. I don't know how to do the Indonesian call, so I do the Hawaiian one.
Hello,
what's on your mind today?
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello,
Michael, can you hear me?
Okay, that's it. Thanks for the call. Once it starts to sound like a call in the Bronx in the 1950s, hi, I'm calling long distance. Can you hear me? What are you screaming for? I used to have relatives that would do that. Hello? Can you hear me? Why did they talk louder long distance? They thought they had to project more. You know, they were born talk shows. The people I came from, every one of them wished they had a microphone. Why? They had lungs on them, number one. Number two, they never ran out of ideas. Number three, they thought they knew everything. And number four, they liked to talk. The most important thing was that they didn't know they could hang up on six people at once.
Savage.
Tucson, Arizona. TJ, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. I'm responding to the comments Sally Fields made about if women were ruling things, this world would be better and there wouldn't be any wars. My contention that if women were ruling things, this world would be far worse than what it is. And I cite the examples is the dating habits of women. There are a lot of men joining the Bloods and the Crips to get girls. A lot of times if I've been picked on or harassed or whatever by men, it was because they were trying to get the sexual favors of other women. It was a woman.
You're saying that men fight with each other because of women to show that they're more dominant?
And I'm also saying that because women are responsive to that, by virtue of that, they encourage violence in men.
Some women do. I would say that is true. There's actually a biological, you know, imperative in the sense that the women want the most viable male to produce offspring with. She wants usually a man who can defend her. And who is, more liable to produce a strong child. When it gets carried to the extreme of killing over a woman, of course, I think that's another story. But by a lot, look, let's look at the animal kingdom in order to draw some conclusions, TJ. The moose who will bang heads in order to attract the female. Wherever you look, you're going to see male animals fighting with each other in order to get the female. Isn't that true? Look at the lions. They'll chase, the old male will be chased away eventually by a younger lion. He is then shunned from the tribe. He's no longer considered a viable mate for the women, the girl lions, the female lions, rather. They want the most viable male. And in our society, the women tend to want a nerdy guy today rather than the macho guy. The smart women do because they know the nerdy guy will make more money and probably is smart enough to avoid getting killed.
Uh-huh. Well, see, you're making the point that in order to impress a woman, you have to behave like an animal.
I mean, you got me there, TJ. And by the way, I'm not going to argue with you.
It was a woman who wanted the head of John the Baptist on a silver platter.
TJ, you set me up pretty good on that one. I got to thank you for it. I don't know any examples in history of benevolent women leaders, do you? I mean, which women leaders come to mind let's say there'd be no wars if there were women leaders? Who were they thinking about? Let's say there was a more of more testosterone than Shimon Peres. How about Margaret Thatcher? I mean, I admire those women, but they weren't peaceniks. None of them were.
But sometimes you need to have war. Sometimes if you avoid a war, it causes a war. I mean, for example...
Absolutely, and sometimes it's better to have a war early on before your enemy becomes too strong and you're going to... Let's, for example, Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Right now, he's a pipsqueak. He can be wiped out overnight. He has no military to speak of. He is, though, in cahoots with Ahmadinejad. He's trying to get nuclear weapons. He's buying submarines. This guy, if he is not stopped, will wind up causing a bigger war, and there'll be more Americans and Venezuelans dying 5 years from now or 10 years from now than they would die right now. So an argument can be made that he should be stopped before he gets bigger. I think that's what you're saying, isn't it?
Well, go back to World War II. Had William Chamberlain had not been appeasing Hitler, and had we just taken him out from the beginning? As a matter of fact, I heard a story that the orders were cut to arrest Hitler for violating the previous treaties from World War One.
Yes,
and
you're 100% right. If Hitler had been stopped at Munich, World War II could have been aborted. Tens of millions of people wouldn't have died. It's the same with Ahmadinejad. Why should a new Hitler, which is who Ahmadinejad is spiritually, intellectually, in every way, he's saying the same things Hitler did. He wants the nuclear weapons so he can terrorize the world and kill people. He does not want it for peaceful reasons. If that man was stopped now, we could avoid a larger war. I don't know where you stand on that one. Do you think we should go and take out Iranian military targets?
Oh, definitely. I think we should have done that when we went in with Iraq at the same time. Oh, getting back to women, though. There's a belief system that women mature faster than men, and I don't believe that. I believe women just at an earlier age desire to have a mate. That does not necessarily equate with the fact that women are mature, because all you have to do is look at how they behave in divorce courts.
You know, you're the best misogynist I've had on in years, TJ. You really sound jaundiced. What happened to you?
Well, first of all, some of the most cruelest things have either been done to me either by women or by men who were trying to impress women, and I've made those observations very young in life. I wasn't even a teenager by that point, and I don't worship women.
I'm not going to argue with you. You're not the only man on earth who feels a little intimidated by the gentle sex. All I know is this. When the Year of the Woman came along in Congress around 92, 93, 94, do you remember the speeches we heard that when women were elected, we'd have a more gentler Congress, et cetera? Now, I ask you, when you look at Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Mikulski, do you feel that we have a gentler, kinder Congress?
We have a cattier Congress.
Well, let's look at Dianne Feinstein and her husband, Richard Blum. Would you say that we have a more honest Senate with Dianne Feinstein as a U.S. senator?
No.
Do you think that if a man did what Dianne Feinstein allegedly is doing in terms of steering contracts from committees that she sat on, defense contracts to her, let's say it was a man sitting on a defense committee, and he steers contracts to his wife's consulting firm, and she's worth hundreds of billions of dollars, do you think that man would have stayed in office as long as Dianne Feinstein has?
Yes, sir, as long as he was a catty, effeminized, liberal man. Yes, sir.
You got me there again. You have a pretty good sense of humor, TJ. How do you survive in Tucson, Arizona? Are you calling from penitentiary?
In a way, yes, sir.
You are incarcerated? Because I did invite people from prisons to call last week. You're in a mental hospital or a prison?
No, I meant that more figuratively, not literally.
I know you did. I was just kidding. But you have any relationships with women at all? Mother, sister, children, daughters? No.
Right now I'm trying to get over a sports injury, so I'm staying away from the dating scene. But to be honest with you, it was my sister who re-injured my sporting injury.
So you're saying you were in a cast and she came in and twisted your ankle?
More specifically, I have torn cartilage in my back, and she took me on this back mountain dirt road with a bunch of potholes on it, and I told her that I had a physician's order to stay off of pothole-ridden roads. She lied to me, and her husband drove like about 50 miles an hour over the potholes, and so I have an MRI report that shows that my disc was healing.
Oh, my God. This is a really serious story here. So you're a little leery of women to begin with. Now, on top of it all, your own blood turns out to be untrustworthy when it comes to this.
let me tell you this story. Whenever I'm in bars and I'm meeting women and telling me about how rotten the ex-boyfriends were and abusive, I ask them, you know, well, what's he doing? And when they kind of shrug their shoulders and say, I don't know, I'll tell them straight up, well, if you can't even tell me what the problem is and what he's doing, how do I know that you're not the one that's instigating the bad behaviors? And, you know, a lot of women are actually turned on by that. You know, I've never had a drink thrown in my face, but the bottom line is you can go in bars all over the country with a bunch of women who are berating their exes, and every man knows that they're lying, and whatever it is they did that to provoke the problem is being left out of the story. But still, men will, yeah.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, you have to go, stare them in the eye, too, and buy them another drink.
See, nobody tells women the truth that when they're wrong, and so what you have is a whole society of women who really don't have a good fix.
Yeah, but you want to get a heart attack, tell a woman when she's wrong. Have you met a woman yet who will admit she's wrong in your whole life?
I've met some women where you could get away with it more than other women, and I'm
amazed. There are some brilliant, intelligent women out there who can never admit they're wrong, though. There's something about the feline nature of a woman that it's very hard for them to say they were wrong. I don't get that. I don't understand that part of it. If I'm wrong, I admit I'm wrong. It's not easy for me, but I'll have to admit it in order to go forward myself. Okay, you're an honest guy. I want to ask you something. You heard the story I read today from the website. Federal prosecutor arrested in child sex thing. He was trying to have sex with a 5-year-old girl. What do you think of a story like this? What's your reaction to that?
Well, my reaction to that is the death penalty for people who do things like that. One trial, one appeal, and that'll get rid of those kinds of problems.
But could you believe this man works for the U.S. Justice Department as an assistant U.S. attorney in Florida?
Yes, sir, I can. I mean, just look at the activities of the ACLU and what our criminal judicial system is letting them get away with.
You're good. TJ, you should head up the Savage Nation in Tucson. You're like a one-man Savage Nation in Tucson.
I could probably do it for maybe 15 minutes.
You wouldn't have patience, I know. Well, let me send you a gift. I got to send you a gift. You pick it. You want the CD? You want the Healing Children Naturally? You want the Alzheimer's book? Anything else I can send you from the cornucopia of Savage items?
The CD would be great.
TJ, stay on the line. We're going to get you the Michael Savage DVD Freedom of Speech Award by Talkers Mag. You'll see me gesticulating wildly with my New Yorker hands. Teddy does make a little doggy appearance. He's not a SAG employee, so I got him for cheap.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Chicago, Chicago,
Chicago. Did he say sick cargo?
Chicago.
I got a new name. It's like San Francisco. Chicago, Chicago. Got a new name here. Chicago. Chicago, Chicago. Where'd the governor go? Where is the governor now? Is he working for Obama yet?
On State Street.
What was his name, the bug? The bug that it. Goy? The Goy? Oh, Blagojevich. Blagojevich. I forgot his name already. It just shows you how fleeting infamy is. It's unbelievable. Remember, he was everywhere? A Luno. Is he in talk radio yet? Has he been syndicated by anybody yet? Chicago. It's the Ron Blagojevich Show. Today we're going to do specials on hair. How to prepare, how to sustain, and how to support your hair. But first, a note from my wife on how to sustain and how to dye hair. Where is Ron Blagojevich? Is he working for Obama yet in the Truth and Consequences Department? I didn't like that song at all. I do like Frankie Once in a While. I got a migraine, a half a migraine from jet lag, number one, too much espresso, number two. I did the espresso, and then I put the piece of lemon in. I'm trying to Neapolitan way. It's horrible. I cut a little piece of lemon peel from my own tree. That I like. I love lemon from my own tree. There's a kick. As a kid who grew up in the Bronx who didn't grow, I didn't know a tomato from a lettuce. I didn't know how they grew. I thought the tomatoes grew in slices. I thought they came out of the ground sliced. I swear, I had no idea. I thought a lettuce grew as a leaf, not as an entire head of lettuce as a child. What did I know? I never saw a vegetable in the ground. I grew up in pavement. I thought a tomato came out in slices. I had no idea. Well, years later, I became an expert in botany. But all kidding aside, I mean, I love growing lemons and oranges and apricots and kumquat. I have some of the most beautiful fruit trees in the world. The pears are my favorite, your own pear tree. There's something so basic about it. Long after I'm forgotten, like Blagojevich, you name other people that were once, you know, prominent in your mind. Once you leave the people's consciousness in our world, you're forgotten completely. I used to think you could leave a mark on society. I used to write when I was 18, how does a man leave his mark on society before he leaves the earth? You know, I was into that whole Sufferings of a Young Werther. I must have written now by now about 30 books. A 15-year running talk show that's a phenomenon. You know what? 6 months after the show is over, you'll forget I was ever on the air. You'll still have Clarabelle. You'll still have Jack in the Box telling you Republicans good, Democrats bad. What more do you need? What more do you need? Republicans good, Democrats bad. Why, we believe in the free market. Gas at $5 a gallon is good as he flies over your town. $5 gallon gas is good for you. It's free market.
Savage.
Van Jones is an anti-police radical activist from the gutters of the Bay Area. Van Jones has made his name by videotaping police as they have done their job or try to do their job. Using video cameras, lawsuits, and protests, this character, Van Jones, has fought to prevent the police from protecting the citizens of the Bay Area against the scum and dregs of society. He has had policemen fired. He has ruined lives. And he's made us all more vulnerable to street gangs. And yet, strangely enough, or shall we say, predictably enough, Barack Hussein Obama has appointed this character, this anti-police character, Van Jones, who you're not going to read about, to be Obama's special advisor on green jobs. What you don't understand is that this is a very dangerous appointment. Why are there so many czars under Obama, number one, who bypass the normal appointment process, who are not grilled by senators or congressmen, who report only to Obama? The reason is it's a power grab. Now, I want to tell you something else that you have to know. The fact of the matter is that Obama may be getting ready to organize his own personal army, not of brown shirts, but of green shirts. And that is why he has given this street thug, Van Jones, in my opinion, a street thug, a man who has specialized in harassing the police themselves, this all-important job. If Obama should appoint thousands or more than thousands of people to the environmental green czar to work for him, and then he deputizes them and then gives them guns and then gives them federal powers over that of the local police, you will know that we are repeating history in the United States of America. You see, there was another man in another country who rose to power on an army of street thugs. And he had a friend named Ernst Röhm, who headed up an organization called the SA. The SA was a political army which protected the Nazi Party leadership. It battled political opponents and terrorized the German people who opposed Hitler. Ernst Röhm was an avowed socialist. He rejected capitalism. He pushed for the nationalization of German industry and the redistribution of wealth. It seems that the Obama appointees actually have almost the same exact policies as the Nazi Party did. What you don't know is that the environment in this case is being used by the Obama administration in an attempt to gain control of the U.S. population. The brown shirts, as I said, under Hitler, were used to intimidate Germans who opposed Hitler. My fear is that Obama will be using the green shirts, these street agitators, in order to control the police and the people. Now, you're not able to talk about this because you don't know who I'm talking about, because the vermin in the media are covering up this very dangerous situation that is going on right in front of your nose.
Savage.
I've expressed exactly what I feel about Obama and his minions. I've told it to you, neo-Marxism. I tell you my fears that we'll be living in a Cuba-like society within a few years if this man's trajectory is not stopped. In other words, if you let this man win at every turn, this radical professor, this radical street organizer, this Saul Alinsky clone, if you let this man win at every turn within 3 weeks, where would you be in 3 years? Think Castro's Cuba. All of your freedom of speech will be gone. All of your freedom of expression will be gone. You'll be arrested. People will be spying on each other in this country under the guise of peace and love and compassion. That's my deepest fear, is that this man has to be stopped. No man should be a dictator. I don't care whether he's a conservative or a liberal. No president should have absolute power. And you're now living where Big Brother wants to dictate every aspect of your life. Obama had the nerve to pass a child health bill that the Democrats rewrote to include illegal alien children, meaning illegal alien children are now going to get a gold-plated health care system courtesy of you, the moron taxpayer. He got away with it. There was no talk of it in the newspapers. The so-called prophets of our time, the low-life journalists who are cousins to the low-life politicians on the left, did not even let you know that you were just screwed by another Marxist bill. Where is the money going to come from? Doesn't matter. As long as the children have health care, even if they're illegal alien, doesn't matter whether they have the money for it. So as I say, if you don't stop this man, you're going to have a total dictatorship in this country. And we know what the model is. The model is Cuba. That's the model. You don't have to look any further. You don't have to go any more extreme than that. The opposition to Castro disappeared long ago. They were either exiled, self-exiled, left the island, or they were executed, or they were imprisoned for up to 30-some-odd years. Don't say it can't happen here. It will happen here, unless this dictator is shown that he is not a dictator, but he is the president of a republic of the United States of America. Do you understand this? Now, what are the signs of what this man might do if his grandiose schemes are not inhibited? I think that was well put. If his grandiose schemes are not inhibited, what might he do? Well, how about the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms? We know that all dictators do not want an armed populace. Not that that means very much anymore, because with the advent of the tax squad and the power of the police, what are you going to do with a gun? Are you going to defend yourself? You'll defend nothing. Look what they did to the poor Randy Weaver at Ruby Ridge. They killed his wife and son. And not one of those criminals in the ATF or the FBI went to jail. They shot Randy Weaver's son in the back with a scoped rifle. That's your government at work. They killed Mrs. Weaver. They shot her. I watched the hearings, and I knew that America died that day. When I saw the most evil woman in the history of American politics, Dianne Feinstein, conduct the Soviet show trial of the trials surrounding the deaths of Randy Weaver's wife and son. They put up a curtain to protect the identity of the murderers, the ATF and FBI agents, who shot Randy's wife and son. And Dianne Feinstein sat there like the Chinese Mandarin she appears to imitate. And I remember to this day how she spoke. Tell us how it happened. Agent X, so the calico curtain was blowing in the wind and you could not see clearly when you pulled the trigger, correct? Yeah, Diane. Diane, if there is a heaven and if there is the other place, I am sure there's a place waiting for you in the other place. That's all I can say. Because we know that you're so powerful right now as chairman of the Senate Armed Intelligence. It's impossible for me to believe that this hack, this harridan, is now the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. I've never seen anything like this. Women who have never fired a Daisy BB gun are now in charge of where our troops go. Women who have never fired a Daisy BB gun now read the most intimate intelligence reports and decide what shall and shall not be acted upon. They put our boys in danger, in harm's way. That's where the country is today. So looking ahead, the prognosis to Dr. Savage, for the Dr. Savage, my prognosis for America is very poor. I am sorry to tell you this. I won't say I'm depressed any more than a cancer surgeon would be depressed if he opened up a patient and he saw that the disease had metastasized almost to the point of an irreparable cancer. I do not know what can be used to save this patient. I do not. And for me to say to you there's hope, I would be lying to you. And I'm not going to lie to you, because the day I start lying to you about politics is the day I'll resign. You know, I see the whole world through many different ways, in many different ways, excuse me. And I could tell you that today I saw the world through a chicken leg. I know you're going to say, what's he going to say now? Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to say now. I can even describe the world as it is today through a chicken leg. Let me explain. I wanted to make chicken soup today. I haven't made it in 10 years. I once tried it 10 years ago. Then I made it about 3 months ago. But I realized there was something missing from the chicken soup. I tried to think back to what my mother made. And I said, by God, what's missing are the chicken's legs. I wanted the chicken legs in the soup. The reason I wanted the chicken legs in the soup is very, very interesting to me anyway. And that is because I was looking for natural sources of hyaluronic acid. You don't know what hyaluronic acid is, but I'll tell you what it is. Hyaluronic acid has been found to reduce inflammation, lessen arthritis, and strangely enough, hyaluronic acid, or HA, is a component of our vitreous fluid in our eye. And strangely this year, I had an eye problem that was found in the emergency room to be resultant from some change in my vitreous humor. I've had minor arthritis come on in the last 3 months, which I've never had before. I've never suffered any of this before. And suddenly I was reading about hyaluronic acid, and I said, wait a minute. Two symptoms, both of which might be related to HA. Why don't I try to get some naturally? So I do my research, having a PhD in human nutrition, having written so many books in the field of nutrition as a pioneer in the field since the 1970s. I said, my God, look at this. Chicken skin, chicken legs contain high amounts of this component, hyaluronic acid. So I said to my housekeeper, could you please go get me a chicken with the legs? Tell the butcher you want the legs. I get a call back. No legs in the chicken. Can't find it in any market. What? I called a butcher. I said, where are the chicken legs? He said, we don't get the legs. I said, well, who gets the legs? He said, they're sold before we get the chicken, even if you buy a whole chicken. They're sold to people who make chicken soup. I said, of course. They're sold for chicken soup. That's what I'm trying to make. But then I thought, and I said, the greed in America is so great, the corruption is so great, that you can't even buy a chicken with chicken legs and gizzards anymore, because the crooks at the top of the food chain want to suck out the chicken legs and the gizzards and sell them to someone else. It's like the old adage about the man who raised pigs and sold pigs, we sell everything but the squeal. But you can't even get chicken legs unless you're Chinese and you go to Chinatown. You see, because the Chinese are smarter than you are. Americans are kind of naive when it comes to food. They don't even know food. They don't understand food. They think food is multiple courses in a rotten restaurant that charges $99 for rotten food paired with bad wine. But the Chinese are much smarter. When they buy a chicken, it better be clucking. And when that chicken is killed, they better get all the parts that came with that clucking chicken, including the feet, just as my Aunt Bee did. Because the idea of buying a chicken without feet is the same thing as buying a president without legs. Las Vegas, Amy, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, socialism is such a nasty word to Americans. I can't stand. It's a sensible system, whatever. It's a realistic system. Europeans are clothed, fed, housed.
Hon. Now, I know that in your dear old Europe, the whiskey is supplied by the government, at least the coupons. And I know in Las Vegas, there's no shortage of drinks. You can get them for free in any casino. But before you call the show again to talk about the wonders of socialism, will you please go to your AA meeting or take Antabuse. Thank you. 1-800-449-825. What did I need a Lush for on this show? For God's sakes.
I love your socialism. Your socialism is good. You know, you go over there, they're all so happy in Europe. It's a happy place in Europe. They're all happy in Europe.
Yep, they're all happy in Europe. That's until you talk to the average Italian. Ask him what he thinks about his country being invaded by the illegal immigrants who are robbing and raping their way across their country like locusts. Ask him how happy they are in Norway about the rapes and the robberies being committed by the illegal aliens. The stuff that you don't read in the socialist-owned newspapers. Ask the average person in Europe how they love their country. Ask the average Spaniard how he feels about the subway bombings.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
I was reading a story connected to this about prostitution, the recession-proof career, making a comeback amongst middle-class women. It says, from young New York women seeking to sell themselves to wealthy businessmen, to people offering cheap rentals in return for benefits, to rural Kentuckians trading sex for gas, the news over the last few months has been full of sordid tales of women deciding to turn to prostitution as a means of dealing with inflation. And this was from WalletPop.com. And I looked at it and I said, you know, is this true? And they talk about three acquaintances in New York City who have chosen to become high-priced call girls. Nobody would ever know. They say they're polished, well-educated, intelligent women who are working their way up in their chosen professions. And they don't fit any of the traditional prostitution narratives. And what's fascinating to me is whether or not this is true. Part of the seduction of prostitution is the easy money and the easy access to luxuries. But they open the article of how a society can change its morals almost at the drop of a hat. They say, for example, Weimar Germany, which I've referred to many times. In Weimar Germany, which was devastated by the worldwide financial collapse of the 1930s, and this is Germany, saddled with an insurmountable war debt from World War I. Germany then became a moral wasteland. And as fortunes crumbled and the future seemed hopeless, they say that the basic rules governing social interaction evaporated and Berlin became a destination for sex tourists, not unlike today's Bangkok. And businessmen came from around the world and used their vastly inflated home currencies to buy the affections of upstanding middle-class women who turned to prostitution as a means of making ends meet. From matrons to schoolgirls, women from every walk of life and every level of society demonstrated that in the end there is one commodity that never loses its value, he writes. Now, I'm not saying we're there yet, but I'm seeing a trend according to certain, you know, dribbles here and there that this is happening here. Professional women are on the side prostitutes. So Mike Savage now opens up the lines to women who can put a handkerchief over the mouthpiece of their telephones and call 1-800-449-8255 and tell us if, in fact, yes, I have become a prostitute as a result of the downturn in the economy. I need to do it to pay the rent, or I need to do it to pay the tuition, or I need to do it to pay for my child's dental work or for my child's Ritalin. Because I'm not interested in talking about the criminals on Wall Street who have bought and sold the interrogators in Congress, who, as you well know, are not going to do anything to them. None whatsoever. 1-800-449-8. If you don't want to talk about prostitution, I know prostitutes call me. I understand. You want to pretend that you... We don't have to do that. So we'll talk about the ordinary. We'll go to the bread and potato, the meat and potato, boring show. Oh, we got one who was a... Now, Debbie, do you have a... Okay, Debbie on WR, welcome to the show. You claim you were in this business?
Yes, sir.
Now, are you leveling with me, or are you going to just pull my leg?
No, sir. I was a former working girl in the New York area.
Were you driven into it out of destitution, or were you forced into it through immigration, through an immigration ring?
No, it was destitution. I had lost my job, and I picked up the paper, and there were articles in the paper. Actually, the New York Village Voice, for escorts and I got involved and made a lot of money, a lot of money.
And how did you, well, okay, let's start from the back end. How'd you get out?
I got arrested, and it made me sit and think, and...
So now you have a regular job. I'm not going to ask you what it is, obviously, but did you have to get a regular job?
I had to, yes.
All right, so you went from making $500 an hour, $300 an hour, to making $500 a week?
Yes, essentially, yes.
All right, now, before you became a working girl, a prostitute, you were a single woman?
Single with children.
Oh, with children. So you became desperate and you had to pay bills. So you said, you know what? I'll do what other people have done. This is a profession, so to speak, that has never gone away. That was the article talked about that, which is that it's been going on from forever, and any time the economy gets bad, women will do this. How did you feel doing it? Did you feel degraded?
Yeah, very much. Very much. But
I mean, each time you did it, inside you felt like you were dying?
I felt horrible about it, but the money made me just forget about the pain. I made so much money. It just made me forget
How much did you make?
I made hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars a day.
And, of course, your children know nothing of this?
No, not until I got arrested.
Oh, then they found out. Okay, but this is a whole different world now. Now you're a regular working person in the sense of a regular job. Would you do it again if you went broke and had to?
No, never. Never.
Why? Why not?
Because I almost got beat up. In one situation, someone threatened to kill me, but it proved that I was stronger and quicker than him, and I was able to escape. I saw my friends get thrown out in the middle of the night in the street naked. I could tell you so many stories.
Do any of them work for NBC? Any of the women thrown out naked in the night? They worked for NBC during the day?
Well, actually, we had a lot of very sophisticated women with educations that did work at night and went about their normal course of business in the daytime.
Debbie, hold on, because I have been reading articles on some websites that there are women who actually are married with children. The husband doesn't even know they're doing this. Did you encounter any women in that category?
I knew plenty.
Oh, my God. So who was the most astonishing hooker that you ever met in the sense of what she did in her regular life and no one knew about it but the girls who worked?
She was a school teacher. And another one I knew was an RN.
Mm.
And I couldn't understand why they were in such high, lofty positions in the daytime and then would come out and do this at night. But the bottom line is that they were druggies. And they were doing it because all the Johns would, wanted you to get high with them.
Mm. It's a horrible story, Debbie, but I thank you for exposing this part of your sordid past on the Savage Nation. I only wish that the corporate executives who were being grilled would come as clean as you just did on the Savage Nation. Savage. Now we got the email chain is on my website or on my email already with the family. We're talking vacation. 500 emails. Where to go? Where not to go? I want to go. I don't want to go. I can't go then. I will go then. I won't go. So now it's down to this already. It's a ship again. I swore I'd never go on a ship again except my own ship because every ship I've been on, I got either food poisoning or try to get a helicopter to remove me after 48 hours. The last ship I was on, I begged the owner. I said, "You got to cable the owner and tell him I'll pay for a helicopter to get me off the dreadful nightmare." I called it at the time? I said it was a trailer park with propellers. I never saw anything like this. What was the name of that cruise line? They got me the owner's cabin. You hear this? Did you hear this story years ago? I went on this ship. It was like a two-dayer. After 12 hours, I was begging him to take me off by helicopter. They put me in the owner's cabin as far forward as you can get from the tattooed people jumping in the swimming pool, beating up their girlfriends, that kind of thing. And I'm in the owner's cabin, and above me, this is a, God's honest truth, they put me beneath a running track. Now, I'm noise sensitive. Why am I on a ship to rest or to listen to a moron running at 5 in the morning? Thump, 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 thump over my head 5 in the morning. The runners were running over the owner's cabin at 5 in the morning, so I couldn't sleep. Now you couldn't go to sleep because the owner's cabin was right in front of the swimming pool where I never saw anything like these creatures were jumping in the pool, dueling rollerballs and drunk and rumming. I never saw anything like this nightmare. So that was the last cruise. I don't think I'm going to do this. No. It starts out, yeah, we'll go, it'll be great. What am I going to do if I go in and I get a great cabin and the guy below me smokes a cigar? Why would he smoke a cigar? Because the moron's on a ship and he thinks he should smoke a cigar because he thinks he's rich. Because he bought a cabin for $1,299 instead of one for $699, so he thinks he's rich. And his wife made him rent a tuxedo, and she's not exactly wearing Nan Kemper's gowns. She's not exactly wearing haute couture. She's wearing low couture. And you got to see these creatures in the dining room. No, please. Why am I even thinking of this? I say to myself, that's it. It's over. I'm not going. I'm going to send that email the minute I get off the air. But I was thinking about, like, we have a new thing now. You know, the trend is bloggers, you know, and, like, every politician wants to go to bloggers. Why are they going to bloggers? How many people can read a blogger? What is a blogger? It's a guy sitting in a room writing a column on the internet. So let's say you have 10,000 readers of your blog. That's insignificant. When you consider that, in essence, a talk radio host is a verbal blogger, by the way, you want to put it in that context. But our audience is much larger. Moreover, we can use our voice and our emotion and sound effects and music to make our point, right? Different tones could create different feelings in the listener. But, you know, when you actually analyze what a blog is, you can go all the way back and you realize that the first blog were the Ten Commandments. You think about it. The guy walking around amongst the ancient Israelites, and he says, well, I was walking around on a mountain, and some guy up in the sky talked to me, and he says, here's what he said to me. I wrote it down for you. Look, get out of here. I'm going to the cafe Golden Idol. You know what I mean, Moses? You want to talk about some guy up there? Go ahead. Leave me alone. I'm going to Cafe Golden Idol. I'm going to have a drink. Okay, Moses? You want to come along? Come along. Otherwise, you know, leave the tablets at home. You know what I mean? Leave me alone. But that the first blog, when you think about it, were the Ten Commandments. It was a blog. And in the beginning, no one believed them. Guys are marching around. The only reason it's Ten Commandments, when in fact the Orthodox Jews know that there's 330-some-odd commandments, is because they can only carry around two big tablets. So they figure, put the first 10 on. Here's the 10, all right. You believe these, we got another 10. You believe those, we got another 300 for you. Well, who can carry around, you know, like, who can carry around 30 tablets? So Moses had one tablet at each army. One of the 10 commandments here. Here's my blog. Thou shalt this, thou shalt that's God. I'm not mocking God. I'm telling you that originally, think about it. If you actually analyze it like I do with psychological nudity, and I'm not afraid to take on a subject, whether it be the Dubai port steal or the Ten Commandments, analyze it. I mean, the analysis will lead you to the proper conclusion that the original blogger was Moses. He walked around. They thought he was nuts. Guy in the sky. Yeah, all right. Hey, maybe you need a drink. You know, you've been working a little too hard up there on that mountain with the sheep. You got this whack job idea. Someone up there wrote this down to you. What are you, crazy? I can't do any of the things I like to do. What are you, crazy? Everything I like to do is on that tablet saying it's not good. How could everything I do be bad? It's impossible, Moses. How could everything I like be wrong? Why should I be punished for everything I like to do, Moses? And so so in other words, in the beginning, his blog wasn't very popular. And it was the same with the Christians who tried to sell it to the Romans. They were, in essence, bloggers. And they said, why don't you listen to this? Throw them to the lions, man. We like sleeping with animals. We like, you know, running around with anything we want. There's no such thing as morality. We don't even know what it is. We're Romans, after all. So they threw them to the lions because they didn't want to hear the truth. And that's God's word. And the same thing now. The liberal barbarians are trying to throw the Christians to the lions in the same manner. They're saying, well, what your truth is not our truth. We like to sleep with who we want to sleep anytime we want. There's no morality. We could do it within a road. We could do it with children. Doesn't matter. Animals, doesn't matter. Whatever you want. So we're descending, in essence, back to the ancient Romans. And before long, we'll be back to the animal altogether. Do you like that little? That's not bad. That was like the original blog from there to now. Boom. History all in about 2 minutes. Created it for you on the spot. Now, I'm sure I made as many people unhappy as happy. because stretching people's imaginations is a very dangerous thing in a world where there is increasingly less and less imagination and less tolerance because of the increasing number of pompous fools called liberals who think they know everything, when in fact I know everything. Lawrence, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
How you doing, Mike? I was listening to you about the cruise that you obviously have gone on a number of times. It sounds like a Tradeal event. There's no music on the promenade deck, and you can do whatever you want.
No, that sounds better, but have they updated the mentality of the ships to that extent?
Absolutely. The new cruise line ships, and I won't mention the name of the cruise line, but the ships are more geared to, you know, an older generation. You find a few children on the ship, and it's great.
Great. Where could I find one with no children on the ship?
Probably.
No, I sound like Scrooge McDuck. I mean, the truth is I raise children. I love children, but why would I want to eat around children?
Well, exactly. February and March, there aren't any kids or children, or even teenagers on the ships.
Oh, thank God! Yeah, the worst month to go on a ship is June. The college idiots are on the ship, drunk all night, puking in the hallways, throwing themselves into swimming pools in the most god-awful time of night, you know, music everywhere. So I got to find something like that with this. No, they can't say no children. They're not allowed anymore.
No, they don't say no children, but if you go a certain time of the year and you find that, like, when the kids are still in school.
Thank God. Yeah, but then sometimes you get the grandparents because the daughter became crazy and had to take the kid away. You know, the daughter went mad, that kind of thing. She shaved her head and ran down Fifth Avenue because she didn't have shoes as good as Nan Kempner. I don't know, you know. Thanks. I'm trying to combine the elements. I remember years ago, my lad, years ago when I was on a ship. Oh, God, this was a long time ago. This was like the Royal Vikings. Yeah, in the South Pacific, okay? Great cruising days. So there was an old guy. He was from L.A. Hairy chest, you know, like tan. Looked like a garment center guy. Very nice guy. Like a lifetime, you know, of killing himself. You know, just killing himself at work. So he says, all I do now, he says, I never leave a ship. He says, I'm on the ship all the time. I struck up a conversation. I was like the younger guy. You know, he was the older guy, and he liked me. I liked him. So he said, I cruise the world on a ship. I never get off a ship. He said, I go from one cruise to the other. He said, hey, it's cheaper than than an apartment. He had probably a big house in L.A., but he liked the ship. And he said, I've already given instructions to the cruise line and the captain that if I die, he's in a heart condition, he said, I'm going to get buried at sea. He said, I don't want anything. That's it. I die. They put me in the freezer. A quick prayer like a chicken in a slaughterhouse and boom, overboard. Burial at sea. I'm not too sure about that one. That's hard to do because, the crabs. That you don't even hit a crab. You don't even get that far. They throw you overboard. You're not hitting a crab for like 8,000 feet. Yeah, it's a quick dance in the sun. It's after many a summer dies the swan. There's no question about it. We're all in denial. We're denying the main question. We won't deal with the main question. It's theological as much as it is philosophical. But the fact is that we're all afraid of dying. And the more we're afraid, the more we party till all hours of the night. You know, part of Ivia, dancing. Oh, I was up all night partying. Oh, great time, great sex, great guy. Party on, party. But they're all afraid. They're running from death. And because they're running from death, because they won't face God, they're going to run even further from death until eventually they get exhausted. And there's only one thing left at that point, which is God. They'll come down to it. That's what it comes down to for everybody at the end of the day. So you're lucky if you're born with a high consciousness when you're very young and you face these questions of death when you're young. Because if you face it when you're young and you go through despair when you're young, when you get older, it really doesn't bother you that much. You realize there's nothing you can do about it anyway. So try to live the best life you can. Don't hurt too many people. Don't let them hurt you by all means. But, you know, it's all about walking through that thing called life, which is a gigantic show. It's all a show. It's like a gigantic arcade. Life is a great arcade. You understand that? And on the left side, there are all sorts of exhibits down this one. This was told to me by a holy man about 25 years ago, and I went through this whole thing. So he said, you're walking down an arcade, and on the left side, there are exhibits. On the right side, there are exhibits, and there's little, you know, booths, and they're trying to pull you in. And there's a naked lady here, there's a naked man there, and there's a gambler here, and there's a drug guy selling drugs there, and there's a movie here. And your job is to keep walking down the straight and narrow and not be pulled into any one of those booths. You can look at them. You can understand it's there. You don't deny that they're there. But you don't get sucked into any one of those booths. You got to make that passage. It's a passage, you know, down life. I mean, that's it. Of course, you know, you're going to be attracted to the Cafe Golden Calf. I understand that. But you just don't get stuck in the Cafe Golden Path, and you don't drink to the point where you fall off the stool. You see, it's all this balance, the middle way. But youngsters can't do that. Then they become instant heartless people without a soul. You get it? No? We move on.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I have a real treat for you right now. You know, everybody wants to go behind the curtain. Everybody who's listening to this show wants to know something that the other, just something. There's a curiosity about who's this guy, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to disclose the name of the publication nor the individual, but I'm going to tell you that I'm going to read things to you right now that no other host in the history of the media would dare do. And that is, a certain journalist, who I don't really know, but he's got the bona fides for a major, major magazine, wants to meet me and do a profile on me. Now, I've had this before, and I've been burned before. And so he wrote me about a month ago, and I said, I'm not really, you know, ready to do it. Then I say to him, I sent him back an email, and I say, Michael Savage here, how do you want to proceed? Let's email for a bit. I'm not ready to meet you. I've been lied to and set up before, most notably by every magazine and newspaper writer who I've ever befriended. I guess I'm just a trusting personality who wants to believe in people. So that's what I said to him. So then he, about a couple of days ago, sends me an email, and it says, hi. Sounds fine. I understand completely. I've been doing this long enough to know you can't promise anyone that they will like what you write about them. He says, but I can say that I have no interest in writing a story that reads like an expose. That's been done anyway. Reporters sometimes act as if your expertise in herbal medicine and your upbringing in the Bronx were deep, dark secrets, even though you regularly talk about both on the air. So now here's a guy who actually listens to this show. So he goes on and he says, what hasn't been done is a story explaining what makes your show different from all the others and much more unpredictable. At a time when Rush is getting a lot more attention, I think people might be interested to hear the story of a radio host who also belongs to another tradition. As a listener and a writer, I'm also curious about how it all fits together. You're passionate about the political issues of the day, but also interested in the bigger philosophical questions. The other day you said, that's why we're focused on politics, to make believe we don't care about the eternal questions. So he hears me. Then he says, part of what I want to know is how your perspective on both has or hasn't shifted over the years. Okay, so I let that sit for a few days. I didn't say anything. I forgot. I was too busy. Sends me another note today, and it says, hi, I hope I'm not bugging you. I'd still love to talk, or if you prefer, answer whatever questions you might have when you get a minute. Again, I'm not going to expose the publication. So I sent him back an email that was ambiguous this morning, and it goes like this. What is your orientation here? What is it that you're after? Every other journalist, London Times, etc., told me they'd be fair. They never mentioned my 20 books and ethnobotanical research, my grants to Marines and cops, and so on. All they wrote about was their own biases. How can I help you? I decided that I can't really open myself up one more time. So I got this a minute ago, and I'm going to read it to you, and I'm going to ask you, should I meet with this reporter or not? This is going to be an interactive interview. No one's ever done anything like this. You're going to play a role as to whether I should do this interview or not. Again, I will retain the anonymity of the reporter and the publication. I will do that. Listen to what the man writes back. He says, obviously a journalist promising to be fair is a bit like a doctor promising to be gentle. It sounds good, but it doesn't mean much. But I will say that I've got no interest in writing one of those pieces that's all about whether some outspoken person is good or bad or hateful or whatever. Like I said, that's been done more than once. By this point, it feels kind of old. I agree with him. And it's not what I do anyway. I'm pretty difficult to shock or offend. There are plenty of people on the radio who disagree with Nancy Pelosi, but there's no one who does a show like yours. The storytelling, the unexpected references to Lawrence Stern and Martin Buber, the meditations on life and death, the digressions, etc. And yet I've never read a mainstream profile of you that captures all that. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever read a mainstream profile of you written by someone who actually listens to your show for fun. So in that way, at least, this could be a first. I'm not going to pretend that blank, his magazine, is known as a conservative magazine. But in a sense, you're exactly the kind of person our readers should be interested in. A colorful guy from New York with lots of stories to tell. Can we give it a shot? Should I do the interview or not? Do you trust this reporter or don't you? Will it be another hit piece? This guy's a better writer than almost all of them. This guy actually listens to me than all of them. Now, I had the guy from the London Times come out and he stabbed me in the back. I mean, I took him to dinner down in Eliotto's, had a nice time. He goes back to London. All it was about is I'm a homophobe. The guy flies all the way from London to write an article for his friends. That was the whole thing he got out of it. All right, so what am I going to do? Then there's another creep from a local magazine, again, my best friend, and he puts something out with me foaming at the mouth with spittle coming out of my mouth that I'm a maniac. All right, whatever. They'll be out of business and I'll still be on the air. I've been in the business 15 years, and what I pay in tips, this guy doesn't make in a whole year, this guy who wrote that article, so it doesn't matter to me. I have to be a little arrogant to protect myself, but I'm asking you, should I do this interview or not? I'm going to take a few calls on this. New York City, WOR, Michael, yes or no, should I do the interview?
Michael.
Yes.
Yes, you should do the interview.
Why?
Well, how many conservatives are there on the radio that can wax rhapsodic about John Coltrane, Michael?
None.
Exactly.
Yeah, look, Michael, listen, I understand all of that, but how much of that you think will really wind up in this article? You know and I know that it's only going to be about the gay movement. That's all it's going to come down to. They're obsessed with this, people in the writing world. That's all they write about.
I think you should give it a shot. Conservatives are more complicated than they make us out to be, and you're a perfect example of that.
That's exactly right, and they want stereotypes. They want a fat white male who is balding, who lives in Florida, and doesn't have a wife, only a cat. I'm allergic to cats. I have a dog. Was sad. I was bicycling today down at the mall. I'm a sentimental guy. I really am. I'm getting older. I'm even more sentimental. I'm not as hard as you think. I'm bicycling. So there was a nice couple with two Shelties. I have a poodle right now, a toy poodle, as you know. So I had a Sheltie before named Snowy. I love this animal. 11 years, she gave me such joy. Then she got sick, and they said, gas her. I said, I'll gas you first. People were telling me, put her to sleep. I said, I'll put you to sleep first. I hate when people say, you put her to sleep. She wasn't dying. She was hobbling. She was a little, arthritic. We found a nice couple with a ranchette up in Sonoma. They took her in. She became a part of their family. And she lived another 2 good years. And I saw when the light went out of her eyes, I saw the last day. I mean, look, it's like a person. And what the strange part is that she died around the time that my mother passed away. It was almost as though this dog lived to give me a precursor, a premonition of what was coming. I mean, I've seen it through animals before, but nevertheless, I don't want to go in. So I'm down at the mall, and they have like a bigger Sheltie and a little Sheltie. And these dogs, little lassies. So she brought back this whole sweetness. The eyes are like that of a doe. And the most beautiful personality you've ever seen. So I said to them nicely, "May I say hello to your dog?" And dog lovers are generally nice people, unless they're Michael Vick and they put him into a pit to be ripped apart. But we won't go into that. It's a nice moment, but brings up the whole thing, which is the way of all flesh, and that's all there is to it. The old boxeroo waiting at the end of the road for all of us. The mausoleum versus the ground versus the You still don't want to believe them. No one wants to believe it's real. You really actually believe it? You actually walk around thinking it's going to happen to you? Nobody does. See if that would wind up in the interview. I can guarantee you it wouldn't. That I can guarantee you. You know what I really, I tell you, the guy says he listens to the show. Now, here's something I'm going to do. You want to talk about walking on the high wire without a net? This gentleman, this reporter, is probably just listening to the show right now. I am going to invite him to call the show without identifying himself. He does not have to identify his name or his publication. But if he wants to come on this show and he wants to tell the audience that I should trust him, I'm going to make this the most interactive mainstream interview ever done in American journalistic history. Why don't we change the dynamics of the entire situation? Instead of a journalist saying, will you do the interview? And I'm saying I'm hesitant. And he's saying, I can't say I'm a nice guy, but I'll get it, but I blah, blah, blah. And I'm saying, you should I do it or not? Why shouldn't this guy come on the show without identifying himself and have a conversation with me? And then the audience decides in a vote whether I should do the interview or not. I think that's a dynamic, phenomenal idea. Moreover, I'll go a step further. If I did do the interview after the guy comes on here, just think about how many of you would buy that magazine just to have a couple of new pictures of me. No, I'm serious. This is amazing. So I'm going to throw it out to the journalist. You don't have to do it right now, but whatever. So I'm going to take your calls on this, yes or no. Tucson, Jenny, go ahead, please, yes or no?
No. He's just going to mix a little bit of truth with a little bit of lies and make you look pretty bad. He's going to try to do a psychological assessment. Don't do it. Do not do it.
Wow. Okay, that's woman's intuition. She says no. I mean, this is a pretty amazing show when you think about it. I thought my more intelligent listeners would be interested in knowing what goes on sometimes behind the scenes. The guy sounds smart. But then again, I'm sure he has to answer to someone else. And I'll tell you something else. This man could write a fabulous article about me. He could come out here intending to do a hit piece and realize that I'm really an interesting guy and a decent man, kind-hearted man, very intelligent, and write a fabulous article about me, and his editor could kill it or destroy the article. I shall return.
Savage.
The plane dealer in Cleveland. The turn of the last century, that made sense. In other words, people turned to that paper, the Cleveland plane dealer, meaning they spoke the truth. Today, they don't speak the truth. Today, what they speak is a global speak, perv speak. It's not the plane dealer, it's the perv dealer. Or look at the Los Angeles Times. Look at the names of these papers. Some of them were glorious in their heyday. The Boston Globe. Tumble 6.6% to only 360,000 a day. Why? Why are people in Boston turning away from the so-called globe? Because it's not a representation of the actual globe. It's a representation of the perverts in the newsroom, the leftists and the perverts in the newsroom. That is the number one reason that their circulation is declining. Do you understand this? Now you say, well, how do you know that? I didn't read that. Of course you didn't read it. They're the ones who write the paper. They're going to let you read that the reason their circulation is plummeting is because they're all left-wing. Take a job like that. Anybody else would go out and make a living as a webmaster or owning a car wash. I don't know, but why would you go in the news business unless you were sick? 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. Where were you when the Shabup Shabup song came out? I don't even know who did that song and what year it was. I remember that it was a time that I was driving to Brooklyn. I think I had a girlfriend in Brooklyn the night. There was a, yeah, that's right. And we'd sit and watch the at night on the side with the roads off the Belt Parkway, steaming up the windows. But if you were in Dad's car, the problem was they had, in those days, they preserved cars. Like, they always thought they were going to go into the Henry Ford Museum cars in those days. Every father bought a car. And they put plastic on the seats to preserve the seats. Now, today you buy a car, you throw it out after 2 years, you trade it in, figure an illegal alien will buy it, and take it down with it and do a lowrider on it and a wheel. But those days, they thought they were buying it forever, like a century, a minimum of a century. It was going to go into the Henry Ford Museum. So that you couldn't nick it, you couldn't touch it, you couldn't get in it. You couldn't touch the wheel. Don't touch the radio. Your hand was slapped unless you had a glove on. And they covered the seats with plastic. Now, I got to tell you something. If, let's say you had a girl on the other side of town and it was dad's car and the seats were covered with plastic and it was minus five. Let me tell you, it was not a lot of fun. It did not. It was not conducive towards warmth in that car. But you tried. You did your best. I got to tell you something. Thank God there was alpaca coat. There were alpaca coats. There was wool. There were wool coats. They knew how to make a coat in those days, and you could get around that problem of the plastic seat. And then at the end of the day, you were glad your father put plastic on the seat. To be honest with you, he was ahead of the curve in a way. Cincinnati, Ohio. So what's on your mind, Dave?
Michael, at some point I'm thinking about running as an independent for political office, and I'd like to get your ideas and input regarding what you think are the key qualifications for a politician or an elected official.
Number one, you have to have more hair than your competitor. That's the number one. Well, if you want to win, never mind good qualities. I'm talking about winning qualities. So you're two different things. Good qualities and winning qualities are two different things. Winning qualities, one requires good hair. I've studied elections going back eight elections, and he who had more hair won. I know you think it's crazy. I swear it's like nuts. It works. Whoever had more hair won. Bush had more hair than Kerry, slightly more hair. I counted the hairs on his head. Okay, let's get serious, Dave. What are the good qualities? A, you have to be attractive, physically attractive. If you look like Dennis Kucinich, the most you could do is run a mortuary in the 19th century in a Western movie. You could play a mortician in a Western movie. How could this man run for anything? The guy looks like a mortician in a 19th century Western, like a daguerreotype. Dennis Kucinich looks like the type of body. In other words, I used to love to look at photographs of like war, the war dead, war photos. And there was a time in my life that I studied the Civil War, the daguerreotypes, and it's sad. You see all the dead people and you look at them. Look, there's a certain kind of macabre sense of humor and a certain macabre sense of soul that I have. So if you look at the dead on the battlefield of the Civil War, God rest all their souls. Dennis Kucinich looks very much like many of the dead on the battlefield of the Civil War. So if you look like him, I would not suggest running for office. And that's number one. You have to be good looking. Number two, you have to have a good voice. Number three, tell the truth. In terms of internal qualities, tell the darn truth and the people will flock to you. David, they don't want double talk. They don't want double speak. They don't want glib talk. They don't want proselytization. They want someone to tell them like it is, and they'll line up for you. You know, I got to tell you, David, when I had my first child, I didn't know how to raise a child. How does a young person know how to raise a child? Tell me, you think you know? You don't know. You know nothing. And I'll never forget as long as I live. I was living in Hawaii at the time, and we came home. Actually, yeah, my father had died. We came home for the funeral. God rest his soul. I'm talking a long time ago. And there were a few uncles around after the funeral. Now it's coming back to me. And I remember asking, you know, having a few drinks and eating and this and that. And how do you raise a child? And I'll never forget it. The consensus was, if you love your child and you tell them the truth, that child will work out okay. It turned out to be true. And I think it's true in a democracy with intelligent people. I think that would work better than all of this nonsense with this idiot and that idiot.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Here's another story. This eats me up. Here's the article. Weapon dates bowhead whale to 1800s. A rat bum Inuit, an Eskimo, kills a 150-year-old whale, 130-year-old whale yesterday. And they find a weapon fragment in the old whale in its neck that showed it survived a similar hunt over 100 years ago. The tip of the bomb lance fragment, patented in 1879, that was removed from the neck of a bowhead whale, killed off the Alaskan coast. So now you read the whole story. Embedded under its blubber was a 3.5-inch arrow-shaped projectile that tells us the whale is between 150 and 130 years old. So now you read it, and you read it, you read it, and you say, wait a minute, who is permitted to kill a whale this old? So you read on to the whole story, and you realize it was the Eskimos, the Inuits. Now, they're sacred cows, as you well know. They're like one of the sacred minority groups in the world. So they have a hunting quota for the Alaskan whale. And they're allowed to kill 255 whales by 10 villages over 5 years. Why would they be allowed to kill a 130-year-old whale? To me, this guy committed a crime. I'd like to hunt down the Inuit who did this, and I think he should be tried for animal cruelty. How do you like that? I don't like killing an old whale. I don't like the idea of an old whale being killed. An animal that is so smart, that has survived so long. All the perils of the sea. All the perils of mankind. All the perils of the predators and of disease gets hunted by some hack up there who is allowed to hunt them with some modern weapon. That Inuit should go to jail for animal cruelty, in my opinion. So I know what many of you, where are you going, Mike? Today you're an animal rights activist. Yesterday you attacked big oil. Monday you told us about Unitarianism. Yeah, well, I'm an independent, okay? I'm an independent guy, and I think through things. This is how I see the world. So make of it what you will. Don't confuse me with a Bushbot or a Republican. Please, whatever you do, don't insult me. What are you going to say about it? That he shouldn't? That it's his right? It's his tribal right to kill whales? Well, what other tribal rights are there? That the Native American could kill buffalo? They're not killing buffalo anymore, are they? Only Ted Turner gets to kill buffalo and sell them in delicatessens in San Francisco. Ted Turner, environmentalist, kills buffalo or has buffalo killed for him in the slaughterhouses down there. Low cholesterol meat, buffalo meat. I ate it once. It's like bad beef stew. I wouldn't eat buffalo. There's certain animals I don't want to eat. I don't want to eat whale meat. Why do they need to eat whale meat, those guys up there? They have everything from us now down here. They got welfare galore. They don't live in the ice hut anymore. They live in a nice house we gave them. Welfare house, color TV, car, 4x4, a gas-powered sled. What was the crap? They got to hunt a whale. They got everything they want. I mean, it's flown in. Safeway brings it up to them. There's no need to shoot whales anymore, particularly a 130-year-old whale. Yeah, don't call me on this. It's just heartbreaking, the vicious Inuit. So you're like, oh, man, an Inuit, savage. So he called an Eskimo, an Inuit, a Native Alaskan, vicious. What, they're not allowed to be vicious? They're all good? They're all Nanook of the North sitting up there in a what are you people, crazy? Haven't you learned yet? You haven't learned yet. You haven't learned nothing yet. There's vicious vermin in every race, and there's saints in every race. This guy should be hunted down and arrested for animal cruelty, for killing a 130-year-old whale. That's my opinion. It's a desecration. Patrick, WOR, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hello, hello, Dr. Savage. I happen to agree with you. I'm an independent with conservative leanings, but I also believe in wildlife conservation. Is it
quote? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being a rationalist.
Here's a quote by Gandhi. He says that you have a reflection on people on how they treat their animals. So how are these people? What's the reflection on them? I mean,
tell me about the sacred Inuit up there without teeth and eating sugary foods and watching Oprah Winfrey. Well, why should they kill whales? Who gives them the right to kill a whale? What do you mean it's their heritage? Their heritage went out the window a long time ago. Heritage my behind. You're telling me gambling is the Native American heritage? They used to have gambling casinos in the old Sioux territory? Is that their heritage?
I guess so. I must have missed that.
Yeah, the Comanches had bigger casinos than the Sioux. And what happened was they were all conglomerated under the Nevada tribes.
Yeah, that was the Casino Wars of 1876.
Yeah, the Casino Wars. That's right. You missed that in U.S. history, the Casino Wars of 1814. That's when they were all consolidated under the Las Vegas Indians.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much, sir. It's an honor.
All right. What are you going to do? Yes, I believe in conservation of animals. That's correct. That is correct. Eureka, California. Mike, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Savage, that topic you got made me laugh because I seen these knotheads on a special they had. All of them running around circles, what in the old ways, but they was all chasing these whales down in high-powered boats with high-powered rifles, just like their
A bunch of fakers, all of them. Old ways, my behind. And you've got to put in the new ways. If they're going to live on the new way, then you got to give them the new laws. You're not killing any more whales, idiot. They're an endangered species, particularly a 130-year-old whale. Do you understand the metaphor of killing a 130-year-old whale, how painful that really is when you think about it? Oh. I don't know. It bothers me. It bothers me for some peculiar reason. And I don't know why. I don't know the whale. You could say, well, the guy didn't know how old the whale was. He probably didn't. That's why they shouldn't hunt any whales at all. The Japanese get to kill whales and put them in a can? The Norwegians get to kill a whale and put him in a can. What's it? Their heritage? Their heritage is having their daughters become Jezebels. That's their heritage. That's the heritage of Scandinavia. They went from being these wild Nordic people into this degenerate race up there. The whole country's sinking into a mess. No wonder they brought in the immigrants into those areas up there. They had to save them somehow. Any religion's better than what they have. Their religion is drugs, sex, and rock and roll. No wonder. Here we go. Disagrees on whale hunting. Okay, Mark, tell us why you disagree on whale hunting.
I disagree from the pure fact I come from a farming community. We still hunt. We use the meat for ourselves. We hunt deer and whatnot. And
I understand, but I don't think a deer is the same level of a noble creature such as a whale. Moreover, deer are not only in abundance. Here where I live, they've proliferated to the point where they're a pest.
Absolutely, yeah. You're correct.
Yeah. So I have no problem in hunting deer. It's a game animal. But a whale? Why, there's sufficient whales in the seas that we could just see them knocked off by these greedy Inuits?
Yeah, I got to forgive my ignorance, but what kind of whale is it?
Okay, I don't know. I don't know different things. This is called a bowhead whale.
I know there's certain whales, you know, that the Eskimos have been hunting for years, and I don't think they're endangered.
Well, this is a 50-ton bowhead whale, so that's 100,000 pounds of blubber, of bone, and of whale meat, of muscle. I can guarantee you that guy's going to sell it off to a cannery. It has nothing to do with his Native American hunting. It has everything to do with greed and the bottom line and the greed for the greenback. He's not using it for himself. He's going to eat 100,000 pounds of whale meat? No way. He's not eating 100,000 pounds of whale meat. They don't want it anyway. They'd rather have, I don't know, Jack in the Box up there or Inuit in it, whatever they eat. I don't know what they eat up there. Codfish. Ricola. That Ricola guy goes up there. No, it's too cold for him. He's got shorts on, Ricola guy. Milton on WOR. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, thank you. I don't see the difference between eating a whale or eating shrimp. I mean, you seem to like shrimp, but you like lobster.
If you put a shrimp and a whale in the same category, there's something wrong with your ability to analyze. You don't understand the nobility. It's like saying killing a mosquito is the same as killing a whale.
Well, I didn't say. You mentioned that what's bothering you is that they may be overfished and the endangered species. The reality is that the Eskimos are protecting the species. They have a maximum of 250 whales over 5 years.
Wait. The Eskimos are protecting the whales by killing them?
No, by having a limit to how much they can kill. And they don't kill it with modern weapons either. I've been up there. They actually use it for food over the winter. So they don't.
They use 100,000 pounds of the bowhead whale that the guy killed that was 130 years old. That doesn't disturb you either, that it was a grandfather whale?
Killed every day. Millions of pounds of beef are killed in the United States throughout the world.
Again, you're comparing a cow to a whale. I guess you don't see the difference. It's like saying an eagle is the same as a cockroach.
Differences between a cow and a whale.
Oh, so what's the difference between a human being then and a whale and a deer and a rat and a cockroach? Would you agree with me that there's a difference in levels of spirit or not?
I don't think you could compare a human being, because a human being has a God-given soul, which a whale does not have.
All right, so we're going to put aside a human being. Fine, at least I wanted to see where you were coming from. Good. So the human's different than the lower animals. We'll call them lower animals. Now, let's look at the lower animals. Are you going to argue that as an organism, a whale is on the same level as a mosquito?
No, it's not the same level as an organism, but as far as a human being using it for his own purposes of eating and keeping sustaining the human species, of course you should be able to eat a whale.
Sustaining? You mean those Inuits who live on welfare couldn't live on foods other than a 130-year-old whale, Milton?
Will you give up your shrimp because you could live on McDonald's hamburgers? Would you do that?
I don't eat shrimp. I don't eat shrimp. Since I saw that the sewer shrimp coming in from China is contaminated, I haven't had a shrimp. So don't bring me into the issue. No, let's talk about Inuits killing 130-year-old whales. I'm saying that it's a travesty and it's animal cruelty.
Oh, I really don't think so.
But you're comparing a noble, advanced cetacean that can communicate in a phenomenal manner. You're obviously ignorant about the communication of animals of this level, if you think they're the same as a cow, Milton. And I'm surprised at you, because you probably think you're an intelligent man, and you probably are, but you're ignorant when it comes to animals. Whales are extremely advanced. You understand they're mammals. You know that, right?
I understand that, but there's no reason not to be able to kill an animal for food. Human beings...
So, if you had the opportunity to do so, would you have killed a 130-year-old whale for food?
I am the Orthodox Jew. I only eat kosher food. I have a different idea about food. But in general, I don't see a difference between slaughtering a whale or slaughtering a deer for food, as long as it's for the purpose of sustaining the human species, which is a God.
See, but that's the limitations of reading the Bible. You need to add some knowledge to your skull cap in addition to the Bible. You need to put additional knowledge in there, because that Bible was written thousands of years ago when there was unlimited game on this planet and very limited numbers of human beings. The world has changed dramatically. You can't use the ecological concepts of the ancient olive growers today, Milton. The world is much different. Milton, if we had not imposed limits on certain fishings, for example, off New England, all of the lobsters would be gone by now. If we had not constrained the fishing fleets of Massachusetts, many species of fish would have been wiped out by now. This has nothing to do with the Bible. This has to do with animal husbandry. Just on the level of preserving a species, you have to control the number of animals that are killed. But let's put that aside. Let us look at the whale as a complex organism. This amazing cetacean and its ability to communicate. Have you ever heard a whale sounds, Milton, in recordings? As it communicates with other members of its species of whale?
Do you know that ants communicate to a far greater extent than bees communicate? The lowly ant? That's not a reason not to kill an
ant.
Well,
okay, I agree with you. Yes, at a certain point, all life is sacred. I agree with you on that point. But that doesn't mean that the ant is the same as the whale.
If a human being is going to waste the whale, just kill it for sport, I would say do not kill the whale. But the Inuits are killing the whale for food. I see no difference between the shrimp and the lobster and the whale.
Well, wait a minute. They're not killing it for food. I can guarantee you that this 100,000-pound bowhead whale that was approximately 130 years old, killed by this greedy Inuit, is going to be sold to a slaughterhouse, and it's going to be sold strictly for greenbacks. It has nothing to do with food. They have all the food that they want. They have diabetes up there for sitting on their behinds up there and doing nothing but watching television. And he's not using the ancient ways to hunt that whale. The guy's using high-powered boats, high-powered harpoons, tracking devices like GPS. The guy himself is a criminal. He should be hunted. And that Inuit should be tried for animal cruelty. But Milton, on one point we agree, which is that the DNA in all animals is very interesting. It's God granted, God created. I agree with you on that level. And there's a sacred element to all living things. Don't you, as an Orthodox Jew, make a prayer over everything you eat?
I make a prayer of everything I eat, and I understand that God gave us the food in order
to... Well, hold on. Wait a minute. Let's go into that. What prayer do you say before you eat meat?
I thank God for creating the meat that I can kill and eat. I thank God...
That you killed? You killed it in Brooklyn?
Kill and eat.
You went and killed the meat in Brooklyn?
I didn't kill myself in Brooklyn. First, I'm not...
No, you went to Moish the Butcher... And he got it from a guy who got it from a guy who got it from a guy who killed it. But let's put that aside. What does the prayer say for the people who don't understand the prayer? The religious Jewish people make a prayer over every morsel that they eat. Is it the same prayer or are they different prayers?
Different types of food are different prayers. But the general idea of the prayer is...
Whoa. So they're different prayers for different foods. Now, why would God in his wisdom have mandated to the Jewish people to make different prayers for different foods? Why would he have not made one generic prayer for all foods if they were all the same and all on an equal level?
Because some people enjoy some foods to a great extent than they enjoy other foods. And some foods.
So, but then God recognized that foods vary then, at least from the point of view of humans' ability to enjoy them. So God then recognized that there are differences between the animals, correct? Some animals you can't eat, according to kosher food laws, right, Milton?
Right. Right,
all right. Now, why would God have prohibited you from eating, for example, insects or prohibited you from eating certain land creatures, or you can't eat reptiles, for example, according to kosher food laws? Why would that be, Milton?
We don't eat carnivorous animals. Jews are not allowed to eat any carnivorous animals.
But why would God have distinguished between animals in that manner?
Generally, the reason is because certain animals are, in a sense, disgusting. And therefore, the human being should lower himself to eat the types of disgusting animals like rats and mice and vermin.
Well, what if you were starving to death? Would you eat such animals? Does the Talmud permit you to eat prohibited foods in a time of starvation?
Definitely you may. Definitely you may.
Well, that's an interesting fact unto itself. It's a little off the topic. What I was getting at, Milton, and I have to take a quick break. I would love to have this reasoned argument with you, is that I believe that God, through his commandments of prayer for the different types of animals, made man recognize that there are differences between the animals. You yourself just said that certain animals are lower than others. They're disgusting, such as the pig. You and Muslims don't eat a pork, for example, because the pork, the animal rolls in mud, or, for example, like that. It eats refuse. So you don't want to eat such an animal because it would debase the human being to ingest such a flesh. So therefore, there is a differential between one animal and another. So by the same reasoning, Milton, even from Talmudic reasoning, even from halachic reasoning, can't you then go to the step of understand that even amongst mammals that you can eat, there is a differential, Milton?
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
I had a rough day today. I went out on the boat this morning with the dog. And so I go out on the boat with the dog, have a nice time. Just nothing, not a big exciting day, okay? I got to explain it to you. There is nothing fundamentally exciting about going out on a boat. I go slow. I go very slowly. The dog goes to sleep. Nothing happens. That's considered a great boat ride, incidentally. The best part of a boat ride is coming back, tying up perfectly at the exact spot on the dock that you left, where the staircase that you left when you left, if you could bring your 19,000-ton boat back to the dock and line it up where your exit on your boat is exactly where it was when you got on, you're doing well. I did that today. And then when you start to wash, all is good. Life is great. I'm telling you. So then I come back and I made spaghetti for lunch before going to work to the radio studio. I didn't want to eat anything but just plain noodles. I'm into my plain noodle phase. I splattered my abdomen with scalding water. It was horrible. And I'm not saying it's a big thing like Iraq with an IED. Don't get me wrong, but it happened. I scalded my abdomen. I was wearing an undershirt after the boat. I'm making noodles, and I burnt my abdomen. And scalding water hurts. So I went in the yard and I got aloe vera. Now, and it's much better. I got to tell you something. And it brought back a thought to me. When I was a graduate student, I'll never forget this as long as I live. I knew from nothing about natural herbs or cures. And I went to the University of Hawaii way back in the 1960s, and I was in pharmacology. I didn't even know what pharmacology was. I truly didn't know what it was, and I learned about plants and healing. So that got me into the whole herbal field. It was just amazing to me. I was thinking about it as I rubbed this stuff on my guts. It stinks terribly. Horrible smell.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.